Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 772. Wonka.
Okay. Ellipses. Yeah,
there's not really Wonka. Much you can get out of Wonka.
No.
To mess it up. Although I will say I can't keep track of what they're called anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, which is Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory, which is Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
Now it's just Wonka.
The original was Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory because they wanted to shorten it so people could say, did you see Willy Wonka, instead of did you see Charlie? And then Tim Burton changed it back to Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Because that's what the book was
called, match
right?
The Roald Dahl book. Yeah.
And then the next
book. This is just called Wonka. And the tagline, do you know the tagline to this movie?
Taste the rainbow?
Find out how Willy became ...
Wonka. Ah.
Which is such a cheesy tagline.
It is pretty cheesy.
Find out how Willy became Wonka?
Yeah.
His name's Willy Wonka. That's
right.
He's already,
yeah,
like, I mean, I see what they're trying to do. But
yeah, like, he was, like, he didn't
become Wonka.
He was born Wonka.
His name's Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
His mom gives him a piece of chocolate with the name Wonka on it. That's his name.
Yeah.
So I get it, how everyone calls him Wonka. Wonka. So it's like, okay, how he became Wonka. But I don't know. It's just kind of cheesy. But
yeah.
What else are you going to do with a Willy Wonka prequel? I don't know.
Well, it's not like there's a lot of, I feel like, deep mythology around this, right?
Right.
I feel like.
Well, and to be clear, this is a completely original prequel.
Yeah.
Like, this is not adapted from the book. There is not a prequel book. There is not, this is an original screenplay. Now, I don't know if you can technically call it original,
like,
but
in terms of, like,
it's not
award
adapted.
Nominations.
Yeah, it's not adapted from anything, though. So they completely created Willy's origin. The only origin you get is, I think, him going to Loompa Land, which I think was, like, just going to Africa in the original book. I think he went and found, they weren't, like, the Oompa Loompas were, like, pygmies.
Right.
And so they changed that in the movie to make it Loompa Land.
Yeah, I read the book when I was a kid, but it's been so long.
Roald Dahl has some problematic things in all his books. They got, we'll get into it, but he has a history of, a lot of his stuff was,
I mean,
would be considered insensitive by today's.
If you go back in time and look at anything,
you're
going to find things that with the present eye, I'm a big believer, and you kind of have to view things through a historical context. I also acknowledge it's easy for me as a white guy to feel that way.
But it's a lot of Roald Dahl stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, in this one book. You know how in Dr. Seuss, he's got so many books, and they're like, this book has this picture, which is no good. This book has this line, which is, we got to clean that up. But, like,
right.
Roald Dahl, it's like, I want to say almost every book or every other book you go to, it's like, that's problematic, that's problematic. Like, his company went through and cleaned it up, and we get more into that, but they went through, and when the company changed hands,
yeah,
they went through and came out with the new Roald Dahl books, and then that created a whole book banning thing. And,
right.
You know how it is.
For sure.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So before we dig in, let's go around the table. We can introduce ourselves.
Kevin.
Tom. No Joe. He's boycotting because it's a musical. You know how he is.
Yeah.
So
and the Roald Dahl book thing. He just still hasn't gotten over that.
He's woke AF. And let's knock out shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. That's super helpful and greatly appreciated. You can.
And it's just nice.
It's just nice. It's Christmas time. Have you left us a review yet? Go.
You're going to be visited by the two Muppet Marleys.
Yes.
If you don't leave reviews.
So. Yes. You get visited by. That's always the fun trivia question. How many ghosts visited Ebenezer Scrooge? Yeah. Everybody always wants to say three, but it's four. Unless they're Muppets, in which case it's five.
That's true. The first one.
They always forget Marley. They're like. Past, present, future. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, first off, it's not future. It's Christmas yet to come.
Ah.
Right? But yeah.
Can we just review Muppet Christmas Carol? I know that this is a point of contention for a lot of people that like to argue about their favorites, but to me, Muppet Christmas Carol is the best version of that story.
I mean, it's really good. I'm not going to dog on Muppet Christmas Carol, and it's surprisingly authentic.
Yeah.
Like,
and Michael Caine played it straight.
Yeah.
Which is the best part. That makes that movie. I mean, the movie's great. The songs are great. And the Muppets, of course, all that. But the fact that Michael Caine played that part so straight.
My complaint about the Muppet movie
has
always been that you don't get enough of the traditional Muppets.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, like, so I get, like, so adapting A Christmas Carol, this has always been the problem when existing IPs try to adapt and they want to graft on all the characters.
Like Mickey's Christmas Carol and all that. Yeah.
So you're like, well, Mickey should be the star, but you can't make Mickey the star.
The star is always Bob Cratchit.
Because Mickey can't be Scrooge, right? Now, there's an obvious answer with Disney. It's Scrooge McDuck, right? Yeah. Like, it's right there in the name. It's not really difficult. But like with Muppets, it's like you can't make Kermit Scrooge.
Right?
Like that's not going to work.
So Mickey's Bob Cratchit.
Right.
Kermit's Bob Cratchit. They always make it Bob Cratchit.
Right.
Because he's sympathetic. He's the guy. Yeah.
But because of that, you don't get a lot of your main character. And then like with Muppets, like I would have thought they would have assigned the ghosts other existing Muppets in the same way Waldorf and Statler are the Marley brothers.
Or Marley and Marley.
Yeah. I would have thought that you would have seen some other Muppets pop up to play the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and yet to come.
Yeah.
And you didn't. So because of that, you don't get as much.
I guess in Mickey's, they get the big giant as one of the ghosts. They don't really do that in the Mickey ones either. I don't know why they don't adapt the character. I guess they just don't want, seeing them as dead, I guess. Because like with Statler and Waldorf, that isn't exactly heartbreaking for children.
Yeah.
But I guess seeing Ghost Kermit, Ghost Fozzie like that might.
But I never really interpreted those ghosts as being dead. Right? Like those ghosts.
Ghosts as
well?
Being
I
dead?
Mean, yeah. Like, like Marley's obviously dead. Mm-hmm. But Ghost of Christmas Past, that's not a human being. Like that's
like otherworldly.
That's an
ghost.
Abstract concept, right?
Saying,
so it's that's being embodied by a ghost per se, but it's not like Marley is a actual human being who's dead and being punished for his misdeeds,
right?
But we're like the Ghost of Christmas Past. That's not a person,
right?
Right. That's like. So
you know what? Maybe the kids didn't get that.
Yeah. But so because of that, you get a lot less of the Muppets you love.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't like, I mean, I love the Muppets and everything, but I don't know. That never bothered me. The songs are so good. The sets are so good.
Yeah.
You know, you get Gonzo throughout him and Rizzo. And I don't know. I just, that movie to me is like a must watch. I just love that version.
I think when it came out to like, well, first off, it's the first Muppet feature post the death of Jim Henson, right?
Directed by Brian Henson,
and
who did a great job. I think that was his first one that he directed.
But I feel like Rizzo was fairly new, or maybe that was even his first. So it also at the time felt like, who's this other guy hanging out with with Gonzo. Like, you're still like, give me a Muppet I know. Yeah. Where, like, now you know Rizzo, so yeah, it doesn't feel as much like a, like, who's this guy?
Right,
you
know? I gotcha.
But anyway, my favorite version is the George C. Scott made-for-TV Hallmark presentation.
Classic.
Yes. Although it was released theatrically in Europe.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah, yeah, that was one where I thought if we were going to do a Christmas special, we've never talked about the George C. Scott one, I don't think.
No,
we never reviewed that, so yeah. I thought, well, maybe that would be one, but...
Yeah. So anyway, League of Show Shares. So here's your people who were kind enough to share an episode last week. They include Tammy Lynn Powers Betts, Richard Crotcher, Lane LeVanway, Ralph Tribble, Chris Magic Man, Travis Tewitt, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Sanders, Chris Falls, Dustin Ayers, Taylor Ward, Heather Sachs, Brent Smith, Feel and Film, David Rojas, Geek to Me Radio, In Session Film, Mike and Oscar, Colby Mack, Nostalgia Cast, Ronnie Castle, Binge Movies, The Film Bee, Matt Naglia, and Ryan Terry. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. Don't forget, we're also available on Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and we like you extra. So there's all that. Oh, yeah, you can also watch us on YouTube at youtube.com/@ampersand squiggly NYAY. Real
tilde,
spoilers.
Tilde.
Yeah.
Man, get those numbers up. I think we only had 45 views on the last episode. So not to knock it, but I mean, come on, we got to get more than 45. I at least like when they break the 100 mark.
Yeah.
When I see 40, I go, oh, man, it's a lot of work putting these videos together.
Should I say something to piss off a fan base like we did for Elvis?
I think maybe they didn't get the memo that you make fun of Elvis every episode.
Roald Dahl is a pedophile. There we go.
That seems to be...
That should do it.
That seems to do it.
Yeah. So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in, shall we?
We shall. So do you know much about the history of the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory film? Like the inception of it?
A little bit. I know that they looked at people... Originally, they wanted like Fred Astaire to play Wonka. And I know that Roald Dahl, still alive at the time, wanted some British comedian named Spike Milligan to play it. Because I think he was upset that he felt it was kind of Americanized, especially giving it over to Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they originally they wanted to develop the film, but they didn't have the funds to do it. And so Quaker Oats comes along and says, we're going to make a chocolate bar. And so they thought, well, what better than to tie it in with Wonka, make a Wonka bar,
right,
and fund our film? The chocolate bar never came out. they funded this movie, and all the chocolate bars got recalled. There's like the history goes two different ways. People say that it came out and it didn't taste very good and it got recalled. And then other people say the formula they couldn't get right and they never released it. But either way, the reason why we got that amazing classic Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder is because Quaker Oats wanted to advertise their chocolate bar.
I think a thing to remember, though, is that like we think of it as a classic now. I don't feel like people felt like that at the time. Like, I mean, I don't even know if it was a hit, but like I don't remember it having this... I don't know, this huge love that has developed over the years. Like
when it may not have, but when I grew up, it was.
Okay, no, when I was a kid, so I'm obviously my childhood is closer to the existence of that movie than yours. It was just a movie that played on the weekends. Like it wasn't like a special event. Like when Wizard of Oz was on TV, like that was an event, right?
Wizard of Oz is one reason that the movie became a musical, because originally Mel Stewart didn't want the film to be a musical. So Mel Stewart, the director of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, was a director of documentaries, and he wanted it to feel more grounded.
Right.
And they convinced him to make it a musical, and I think the songs are what really makes that movie special. And he agreed and was happy they did it, but it wasn't going to be a musical at all
in
the beginning.
And so like just according to Wikipedia, its budget was $3 million, and it made $4 million.
Yeah.
So this was not some juggernaut of a film.
And Quaker Oats never even sold.
Got their candy.
Yeah, so it's like they threw that money.
And I went back and read some reviews of when it came out, like contemporaneous reviews. And there were multiple reviews where they were like, these songs are instantly forgettable.
Oh my gosh.
So like it's just fascinating because I see that like people are kind of getting their kicks on being on Wonka right now. There's an element of that out there.
Is there? I thought it got pretty good reviews.
So it's interesting. I've noticed like it seems like it's doing pretty well with critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
But like on social media, I just see a lot of like, why does this movie exist? Who cares?
But you know why though? Those are the people that aren't even going to see it. That's the problem. That's the problem with the internet. I mean, there's many problems with the internet, but you get so many people who criticize films that will never see the movie. They'll take clips out of context.
Yeah. And have no intention of seeing the movie. It's not like they it's like they were never going to see this movie even if it was great.
They go, oh, what a dumb idea. This isn't for me. This movie's terrible. And it's like, well, first of all, not every movie is targeted to every person.
Right.
Which kind of gets me into what I thought of this film. I thought this was a really fun kids movie.
I thought this movie was positively delightful. I went into this movie, I was having a very bad day. And and was like, and I hate seeing movies when I'm in that mindset because I feel like it's not fair to the movie.
Yeah.
And like, I was positively enamored with this film. Like, I did not expect to walk out of this movie having liked it as much as I did. Like, when people are like hating on this movie, I'm kind of like, you have no joy in your heart. Like,
there's nothing. I don't think there's really much to hate about this movie, except again, if people are never going to give it a chance and they're just, they go into it saying, I'm not going to like this movie, like positively will not like this movie. Because it is, it's a joyful, but I also feel like it's a kids movie. It's not
absolutely
meant for adults. It's it's not the four quadrant hit. It's not the adults are gonna joke at all these jokes that go over the kids' heads. I mean, no,
right.
It's
like kids. I mean, I think there's a little bit of that with Hugh Grant is the Oompa Loompa.
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff in there
I agree. Like, it's a very, I think one of the things I really liked about the movie is that it was very earnest. It was just trying to be this really good, fun, fantastical kids movie.
Exactly.
And I feel like it did that.
It excels on every point. Now,
I thought the songs were great.
The songs are good.
I really like the songs. I did not expect to like the. I was just like, you're not like, is there something as good as Pure Imagination or Candyman? No.
No, that's why they redid it.
But there's stuff that's really close. Yeah. I also like the fact of like, I felt like with them doing Pure Imagination at the end, which made sense. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like the new songs felt
beholden
or out of place.
Yeah.
Side by side with Pure Imagination. Like, remember the new Lin-Manuel Miranda song in Little Mermaid? Like, and I didn't even, like, people like love to hate that song, and I didn't even hate the song, but like, does not fit
in the movie.
The rest of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda. He makes catchy stuff. I mean, I can't remember. There's a lot of stuff that I can't remember about that movie, but the Scuttlebutt song, like, I can hear that in my head right now.
Right.
He writes catchy songs.
For sure.
But, yeah, in the movie, that scene, it just kind
of
took you out.
It feels so out of place because, I was really looking forward to Lin-Manuel Miranda trying to, recreate the sound.
Make a Little Mermaid song.
Of Little Mermaid.
And then used a Lin-Manuel Miranda song.
Right. Yeah, but then they just basically what sounded like a cut song from another movie and shoehorned it in there.
I liked it when Hamilton came out and said, what's the scuttlebutt? I really, him and Burr were supposed to do that back and forth. And it's a shame they didn't keep that in the show. But so it's a delightful kids movie. The scenic design, all the magical, whimsical stuff is really good. And it's really fun and entertaining. Now, I really appreciate the original film and how grounded it is. I like what Mel Stewart did with that film because, again, he wasn't even trying to make a musical. And when I think back on it, and we may have had this discussion before, but for some reason, I never think of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory as a musical. And I could never quite wrap my head around it. And I figured it out. It's because people don't randomly bust into choreographed numbers.
Yeah.
The only characters that sing are just basically like singing exposition or singing, you know, what they're feeling, but the other characters don't then go in a big choreographed scene and then go back to normal afterwards.
Yeah.
It's always just one character singing about, or the Oompa Loompas is probably the only one, but then that fits with the characters. You think that's what Oompa Loompas do. They all do their song.
And, like, yeah.
But it's not like the kids then go and do a choreographed thing while the Oompa Loompas. It's just
they
like,
don't just suddenly know dance moves.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that movie, even though it has songs, like the first time I heard someone mention Willy Wonka being a musical, I'm like, a musical? Because I think of musicals Singing in the Rain.
Right.
And Rodgers and Hammerstein. You know, I just think of like, oh, but it's because they, all the characters bust out and do dance sequences. And in Willy Wonka, they don't. So I like the grounded feel. I like how it's not your typical musical. Now, this movie goes to the straight musical.
Right.
This is what I think of as a traditional.
From the opening line of the movie.
Yeah.
Like he's singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I really like Timothée Chalamet, and I struggled a little bit with him being Willy Wonka. And I don't know. I mean, part of it, of course, is because Gene Wilder, like, I mean, not even Johnny Depp can touch Gene Wilder. Like,
yeah.
You know, you can have good actors in the role, but he's so iconic. But also, I think Timothée Chalamet is talented. I think he's charismatic. And I liked him in this role, but there was something, he felt out of place to me. Something about him in the time period. And I just, I don't know. And maybe it's because I think Wonka should be like maybe an older character. And there's just something
like,
about him.
But that's not the story they're telling.
Yeah.
So here's what I think is going on. Because this is my quibble with the film.
Okay. Because I can't quite figure it out. I like him, and I like the movie, but sometimes I would see him as Wonka and just not buy Timothée Chalamet, where I bought Gene Wilder, and I even bought Johnny Depp as being this weird eccentric Wonka.
I liked the Tim Burton one.
I liked the Tim Burton.
I know, like, people, again, like to go back and be like, oh, it's too much. But, like, I mean, I don't know that I've seen it since it came out, but I remember enjoying it and liking that take
Tim
on
Burton
it.
One rules, and the CGI is very ahead of its time. Deep Roy is all the Oompa Loompas.
Yeah.
The CGI is so good, and that movie's from, what, like 2005?
Something like
you
that.
You wouldn't believe. Go back and watch it, and the CGI looks better than the modern stuff. It is so seamless the way they integrate him around. But no, I like that movie a lot.
So here's my theory. One, I don't think Timothée Chalamet is that strong of a singer. He's not awful, but like it seems odd that I get they just wanted Timothée Chalamet and they could get him close enough.
Yeah.
Right. I really felt like who would have been good at it is Evan Hansen.
Ben Platt.
Yeah. I feel like he could have been a really, really good in this. But the problem I have with the movie, and again, overall, I thought it was delightful and I liked it, is that there's no menace in the movie, right? Like Wonka is a loose cannon, and you never know what he's going to do. I mean, in the original film, in Gene Wilder's version, like, he's practically killing children in front of you. And it's like, and it gets away with it because, like, those kids are so awful.
Right.
Like, you kind of don't care.
Right.
But, like, he's a loose cannon. Like, I mean, at one point, like, you think he's going to turn on Charlie, too, because remember, they sneak off and they
fizzy lifting.
They get lifted up into the fan almost kills him. And there's a moment there where he's about to turn on him, too, before he pivots. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, Wonka is fun and fantastical, but he's also dangerous and can turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And Chalamet has none of that.
Yeah.
And it's not in the script. Like, it's not even like he's not doing it. It's not for there for him to do. And so.
But the Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory original film is
an older character
who has become jaded
because the world has kind of turned its back on the importance of chocolate, right?
And he can't trust people. They're trying to steal his recipes. You know, he's brought all this magic and joy to the world, and he realizes that people are just greedy and gluttons, and then, he can't trust his people. So what he's doing, he's a different Wonka, and I totally get it. If you're doing an origin story,
he's not going to be that yet.
And you realize to open a factory and do all this, you have to be fun and silly and magical. And so I don't mind that that's not in the script at all.
But it makes it feel like it's missing something.
Yeah, that could
be
it.
Because
he's so pure. This Wonka is an angel.
He is a babe in the woods.
He is. Yeah. I mean, you know, and many people may think Timothée Chalamet is an angel, you know. But he just, Yes, he's so pure and so kind.
So now,
and naive.
But now the problem becomes, if this is a hit and they want to make more of them,
how do you get him to the jaded part?
Yeah, like, it's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory works because you see a jaded guy who kind of comes out of being jaded, right? This works because he's not jaded. And he's. But if our point is to get from here to there, well, then that means at some point the next movie or movies needs to be the things that happen to him that make him jaded, which are going to be a lot less fun and fantastical.
Yeah. So unless they just totally skip over that. Because, you know, the original book and movie is a morality play.
Right.
You know, it's just to teach kids to listen to your parents and be good. That's essentially, you know, don't watch too much TV.
Right.
Don't be rude.
Don't talk back. Don't be selfish.
Exactly. Yeah. So the, you know, if they never teach that lesson or they never feel like they need to even get there, I guess they don't have to actually tell Charlie and the Chocolate Factory this is completely original.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonka could just go on fun adventures and have his factory and different part. You know what I mean? They may just never get to that, honestly.
Yeah.
And right. Well, I mean, I guess Tim Burton touched it. I was saying, like, maybe don't try, or maybe they learn from that and say, don't try to touch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Just do your own Wonka-verse. And,
right. Well, I think it was smart to not remake Charlie and the Chocolate Factory again.
Yes.
Right? Like, it hasn't been that long. But it's interesting in that the original film is kind of a Rorschach test. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, some people see it and they see the lightness, mm-hmm. which is what we get here. And some people watch it and see the weirdness, which is what Tim Burton obviously responded to in a movie like that.
That's why you get Tim Burton.
And also keep in mind, like, for all the weirdness in the original Charlie and the Chocolate, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, there weren't a lot of other movies out there like that for people who wanted that sort of humor.
Yeah.
Right? Like, today, there are lots of weird little dark movies, even for kids, if you want to go down that rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. Kids' movies have gotten really weird over the years.
But back then, like, this was pretty much it, you know? And I think that's why the movie developed such a strong and passionate fan base. There wasn't a lot else like that out there. And so people really, really clung to that film because of that. And I think also because it was only a moderate success upon release, and wasn't an event when it was on TV. So when, like, I know growing up, like, I just kind of stumbled on Charlie and the Chocolate, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, right? Like, it's just, you know, it's a Saturday afternoon. Like, if it's either sports or you basically had the three networks and two local channels in St. Louis. And so the three major networks on a Saturday, we're showing some kind of a sport.
Yep, I'm out. That's out. Yeah.
I'm out. None of that. Nope. And then you had the two independent channels that were showing movies, and one of them was probably a war movie or a Western. Didn't care.
Yeah.
And so, what's this? This weird kids movie musical? Okay. Yeah. Better than a war movie.
Yeah.
And then you get sucked in because you're like, well, this is not what I anticipated.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think a lot of kids probably stumbled upon this movie and were just like, how does this exist?
And so
it's so weird.
and that's interesting because it's actually fascinating to see that movie was not a big hit at the time. But what it sounds like is kids around that time after it came out found it, and then they fell in love with it, and then they showed their kids. And that's
right.
How you get a whole generation like my generation where, I mean, that is an absolute stone-cold classic
now,
of a movie.
Yeah, now
you know?
It is, for sure.
And so it's just interesting that at the time it wasn't. But it isn't a deep-fried taco, and it's not a cult classic.
Oh, cult, yeah.
It's not. It's a mainstream hit.
I think it's a cult classic that outgrew its cult status.
Yeah.
You know,
right,
I mean, I think there was a time when it would have definitely been classified as a cult classic.
But, like, cult classics don't get WB collector's box sets, you know? Like,
right.
There are so many collector's sets and things because it has elevated to one of the great films, like one of the historically great films. And so, and not saying that never happens. Obviously, films get misunderstood and discovered later. But this has, again, become a great film, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just like, oh yeah, that was actually really good. It's like, no, we now, this is like a TCM film, you know?
For sure.
And so it's just interesting to see that. So to me, I really enjoyed this movie. My friend John and I went to see it, and he's not even a musical person, but he was like, yeah, that's pretty good. So even for someone that doesn't like musicals, he enjoyed it, and we both had a good time at it. But the thing I noticed was, at least to me, the original Willy Wonka movie that I love and is beloved by all these days is very grounded and seems more adult, like not adult XXX, but right. You know what I mean? But
grown
like
up.
When, yeah, grown up, like when you see, you know, the movie starts off and there's news reports and it just seems like it takes place more in the real world and adults have a lot of things to keep their interest and all that, where this movie, it seems to be pure kids movie fantasy and enjoyment, which is fine too, but I appreciate.
Yeah, I cannot figure out what year this movie is supposed to take place, yeah, or decade.
Right.
I can't really figure out what country. I assume the United Kingdom, just because of who wrote it, but like I can't it's just in its own world.
It's just like it's just total you know, which goes kind of with the pure imagination stuff, but you can't really pinpoint it, where Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory seems to take place in the real world with real people, real things going on. They set the place, set the time. It all is just there. And so I find
it's more like the world is real. The chocolate factory is not.
Yeah, you go to the factory and then you're in this magical world where Willy Wonka's world, at least everything he's involved in, is very.
I think it's still trying to do that, because if you think about it, like the boarding house where he stays and Scrub, like that's very much like. It to me, it feels very Dickensian.
Yeah,
right.
For
like
sure.
But I think when they get to the, what is it, the Grand, what do they call it, the Grand Gourmet or the, like where all the chocolate shops are.
Oh, I don't remember Chocolate Shop Square. I don't know. The
Galleries Gourmet.
Galleries Gourmet.
When they get to the Galleries Gourmet, but like so much of the movie seems to take place in that one block area. Right, like that. Just that's what it's all like, kind of just right there, and where those three shops meet, and so, when you get there, it feels like another world, and then it feels like you're at
Diagon Alley at Hogwarts in Universal or something. You know, it feels like they could make a Universal park and have it be.
I was like literally just in London 2 weeks ago, right? Like, and we spent a lot of time in a place called Covent Gardens, and like I really want
Covent Gardens.
No,
okay, good.
So no. I really wanted to go look, because some of the exteriors, it looked like Covent Gardens, and so I don't know if it was filmed there or if they were trying to replicate that, because I mean obviously most of that is a set, but it seemed there was this big giant area where they would have street performers, and clearly they were authorized street performers, because one would do something and then there'd be a 10-minute break and another one would come out, but where he was kind of speaking to everybody looked very reminiscent of that area. And my other theory is there's lots of areas like that in the United Kingdom, and that was just the one I saw. That could very well be the case. But
and I think they did a really good job of recreating Diagon Alley and all that, you know, and Hogsmeade. They in Universal, right? They did a really good job of recreating London and the shops and everything. But it just reminded me, like, because it was on a set, which kudos to them, the practical sets look great. They built a lot of big practical sets, and they looked excellent. But when he was on that clear soundstage and set, which looked very good, it just reminded me of showing up to Harry Potter Land at Universal,
right,
being in that, you know, very realistic, authentic looking area. But like, you're in this little fake town, and
it was funny because when we were in London, we did the Harry Potter tour.
Yeah.
And it was interesting seeing the sets up close, because
did you see the same like things they recreated for Universal? Like those sets, the town and stuff.
Yeah. Like you walk through the street. Yeah. You see all that. You see the train. You see.
How did it look?
I mean, it looked great.
Yeah.
I mean, and it looked like it really gave me appreciation for what Universal Studios did, because like the set they built looked like what you see.
Wow.
I mean, even up close.
So they really recreated it to look like the movie set. Like
they did.
Like, yeah.
Wow. It's if you're ever in the UK, it's like, it's not like a 10-minute thing. It's like a 2.5-hour walking tour.
Yeah.
And it's really cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So the plot of this movie, I mean, we got to find out how Willy became Wonka. That's
well,
pretty much
sure.
the, yeah, I mean, as one does. So young Willy is, he's been on a boat. I don't really know what he was doing. Did they, I mean, I don't know.
I thought, well, he went on all these world adventures. He's probably just having come back.
Oh, he's just hitching a ride from.
Yeah, like coming back from Loompa Land or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So he's just getting off a boat and he lands in town, whatever this UK town is that we think. And he has his eyes set on opening his own chocolate store. So that's where we get to the
Galleries Gourmet.
Galleries Gourmet. So this must be the part of London where all the chocolate.
If you make chocolate, this is Broadway.
This is the place. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so there's the three big ones. There's Slugworth and Friends. I don't know what the other. Yeah. Whoever, you know, we've all heard of Slugworth, you know, which is just like a small part of the original movie. So it's Slugworth and two other chocolatiers, but they are the big ones. And what we come to find out later, which, you know, is not discovered till later in the film, but they have a whole. Do they call them the mafia or something? Like they
cartel?
Have, the cartel. They have
chocolate cartel.
Which is pretty funny. That they're controlling the supply of chocolate. Yeah. They have all this extra chocolate.
I don't think it's that crazy in so much as that we have written laws to break up cartels and monopolies over the years, although they've reassembled under different names and guises. But because of that, we're really used now to hearing the word cartel only associated with drugs.
Right.
It was a pre-existing word that was applied to drug cartels.
So it wasn't always illegal. A cartel
was. Cartels were basically like collusion between companies to keep out competitors, right? But
the products weren't always illegal.
Yeah, the product they're selling isn't necessarily illegal. It's the tactics they're using to sell the products that were, if not at that time, illegal, immoral.
Gotcha. Okay. So we find out that they're all, you know, working together to control the chocolate supply and the prices and everything like that. And they're very rich. So Willie shows up and he is magical, essentially. Like, you never really understand how Willy Wonka in the Gene Wilder version does what he does because, you know, he has machines and everything, but obviously with fizzy lifting drinks and all that, there's a very magical element and turning someone, you know, all these flavors and turning someone into a giant blueberry because they hadn't perfected the blueberry pie thing yet. I mean, obviously all that is very magical, but you never really see him doing magic tricks. It's just his products have this. You know, you see the products doing this thing, but in this version, Willy Wonka is able to, you know, pull a rabbit out of his hat.
Right.
He's able to pull out machines and all these different things, a teapot, a cup, and pour himself tea out of his hat. And so he says he was an aspiring magician. When he grew up, he wanted to be a magician. So that's where we kind of get the background of him learning these magic tricks. But you see a lot of it where we never really saw Gene Wilder doing magic.
But it's still positioned in such a way where you're like, is he magical or is he just a magician?
Yeah, like those doing are tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. In this movie, the stuff he's doing, like,
I mean, he's making people float, like, yeah.
Yeah, because the and again, that is the product, so I guess that kind of lends itself to the Gene Wilder version.
Right.
But still, like, he's on the street and I don't see that, like, for him to pull out a tea kettle and a teapot and all that, like, one, where would it come from? And two, like, he's not performing.
Right.
It was like he was by himself and it was cold and he's pouring himself a cup of tea.
It was just his way of storing things.
Yeah, it was his way, like Felix the Cat or something. Right. I mean, it was, to me, it came off as like Willy Wonka actually, I guess you could explain it away as he's a magician who, those are tricks.
Yeah,
you
know? But who's he performing
but
for?
Right, so to me, he seems magical and obviously his adventures and everything seem very magical. Anyway, he comes to town and his first thing that he does is that he, when he sees the chocolate shop and you get a big dance number with a lot of good choreography. Mm-hmm. I mean, the songs are fun. The choreography is really fun. But he releases, when he gets to this chocolate square, he releases these floating candies that fly around. And he can also control them very magically, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're spelling out a W for Wonka.
Right.
Like, man, like, I mean.
The hover chocks.
There you go. It's hover chocolate. And so they did you think it was weird? In this movie, it seemed like a lot of candies were wrapped and they would just stick them in their mouth.
I was noticing that too.
It was very disconcerting because no one took wrappers off any candies.
Right.
But they seemed like candies with foiled shiny wrappers.
Right. I was like, is that part of the chocolate design?
And I guess Willy Wonka could make edible, but then again, like, wrappers are to keep the chocolate clean and together.
Right.
Like, what's the point of a wrapper if it's all edible? I just couldn't really get a grasp on.
Yeah, the only thing I could think is I just heard this term the other day that I've never heard before in script writing called shoe leather.
Okay.
And it's like when you take out things because they just slow it down, and what's the point? Like, Kramer never knocks on the door. He just enters, even though it's New York City, and who would leave their door unlocked?
Yeah.
But you don't want to take 20 seconds
each time
for a knock on the door, and then Jerry goes over and opens the door, and then, you know what I mean? And sometimes people would hit the buzzer at the Seinfeld, hit the buzzer, and he'd buzz them in.
Sure.
But normally it was like, but they would still just walk in once they got up there. It was really more of like this, like, they would finish the scene that they were doing before the new person entered, or that portion. Yeah. But so, like, I don't know if it was just that they're like, we can't have people spending the whole movie unwrapping chocolate.
I like, get it, but it's like, man, if it bothered me because I don't know. But to me, if I were to eat a piece of tinfoil, my teeth would shiver. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I have that really sensitive thing where, like, metal and stuff, like,
it's, well, especially if you have fillings.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And so,
like, my teeth are doing it just talking
now,
about it. Yeah.
They are. Yeah. I can feel the thing that you know what biting a piece of tinfoil would feel like, and my whole mouth is just shivering. It's so weird. But anyway, so every time I saw them pop a chocolate and it clearly looked like it had a wrapper.
Right.
It made me I
had the same thought. I was like, I'm like, because also you can't have somebody unwrap chocolate because it would be melty and gross.
Yeah,
like you,
some M&Ms.
Well, yeah, but he didn't invent those.
Yeah, well, W&W's maybe they just were flipped upside down.
Well, it's one of the recipes that got stolen.
See,
that would be a
Mars
great
stole.
That would be a great storyline. They probably get the suit out of them, but
that would be really funny though to turn, have a little circle candy and it says W&W or something, you turn it upside down and it's like a throwaway gag or something. Oh, that was something that I used to do, but someone else got, oh man. If they ever do that, we gotta get credit. This is on file now.
Yes. Trademark Rispoles.
Yeah, but anyway, so he does this really big, like, he's like a circus barker, like a carnival barker.
Yeah.
And he's like, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. And then he does a big musical scene with the hover chocolates, and they're all floating around. And it's basically like a drone show, but with hover chocolates.
Right.
And they're flying around. And he says, you know, you're going to want to taste world-famous Wonka's chocolate, or not world-famous yet, but whatever. And so the people are getting all excited and everything. And Slugworth and friends come down, and they're just like, what is going on here? And they don't like this disturbance and anyone coming on their territory, obviously. And so they each try one of these chocolates. And then at first, you know, you're thinking, oh, wow, they like them. Both guys like, I can taste, there's so many flavors. I can taste the cherries, and I can taste the, you know, everything he's talking about. And then Wonka's like, yes, 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 all these are so great. And then they're like, this is absolutely the worst chocolate I've ever tasted. Chocolate should be simple. And, you know, and so they immediately dismiss it. And clearly they did enjoy it, but they have to, you know, protect their product, which is very bland, basic chocolate. And so anyway, Slugworth had called the police before he came down to taste the chocolate.
The other two are Prodnose and Fickle Gruber.
Yeah, friends.
Yeah.
At least it's on the record. He said it, if you want to know.
Yes.
Rewind to this point in time. So the police come, and Keegan Michael Key is the chief of police with an American accent. Now, I did think this was very odd. Now, it's different when you're, you know, Sir Ridley Scott, and you're directing an epic and no one has accents.
Right.
I mean, they just didn't have him do an accent.
But didn't even try.
Somehow he became the chief of police, but he's clearly American.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I'm not trying to, like, this movie's delightful, and I swear with a kid's movie, I'm not trying to nitpick, but when everyone else has accents and stuff in the area.
Yeah.
I mean, and I get, like, someone getting transferred or having a job, but he's the chief of police. That just seems odd.
Pretty high up the ranks.
Yeah, just seems odd. So, like, an American just came and became the chief of police. Anyway, it's weird, but he doesn't do the accent thing, but he's on the payroll of the chocolate cartel. And so he comes and busts everything up, and one of the police officers says, you know, we saw him earlier, and he said there's a fine for dreaming, which is just kind of a funny thing when he has so little money and it's all getting taken away. He comes with 12 silver somethings in his pocket.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the denomination was, but he's got 12 and he ends up with one, and then it's his last one. He flips it in the air and it falls in the sewer, which just kind of shows you, like, he doesn't have much. All he's got is a dream and these chocolate recipes. So anyway, the guy leaves him with one whatever. And so we should say that the reason why he's trying to go out and make some money is that he's staying at this Belcher something.
Yes, Scrub It. That's
Scrub It and Belcher.
Yeah.
Or something. And so it is like this It's like a
boarding house slash laundry.
Laundry, Matt. Yeah, it's interesting. And so on the front, it looked like it was just some kind of boarding house. And when he gets there, they offer him a room, and there's this really long contract. And clearly, the audience can tell clearly it's a scam, because it unravels into this like 100-page document of small print, and one of the kids there ends up saying, "Read the fine print," and then they shoo her off, and Willie looks it over, and then the Belcher guy is about to club Willie in the head when he's reading it over, because he's not going to agree to it or something, which I don't really know what the plan would have been then, but for comedic effect. And then he's like, "Everything looks good," and you're just like, "What? Why is he agreeing to this?"
I know.
And the Willy Wonka that we know, we think he has an ace up his sleeve.
Right.
Like to me.
Yeah, I thought there was going to.
He was going to give them their comeuppance or something.
Found a loophole in the fine print.
Exactly, this, again, this Willy is so pure and innocent. And he even says, when he talks to the little girl, he says, "I depend on the kindness of strangers." Like, he's so innocent that, and come to find out what, he can't read. That's the thing, is that he pretended like he was reading over it, but he can't read. So he signs this thing, and then come to find out that these people are running. They're kind of like from Les Mis. They're kind of like from the couple in Les Mis. Remember, they would charge for everything. Sacha Baron Cohen and Helena Bonham Carter in the newer movie, if you've seen that, they would charge for every single little penny pinching thing. And so these characters, that's their scam, is they get someone in that needs to stay for the night, and then they charge them to warm by the fire. They give them drinks that they think are complimentary, and they bill them a ton of money for it. And so they end up billing them, and when they can't pay, because these people clearly are down on their luck, they they're like put into indentured servitude. They have to pay off their bill. It's like scrubbing the dishes, but they say you owe them 10,000 farthings or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's so hard in different countries and different time periods. Like, you can't even just be like, whatever pounds, because it's like, no, this is a totally different time period. But, so Willie ends up owing them 10,000 farthings, we'll say, and they say you can work them off at one a day. So it's like, years and years and years. And anyway, so he he leaves that first day because he thinks he only owes them one. And so he goes to the town, and then luckily that police officer is nice, and he gives him one, and he comes back with the one, and they go, "Yeah, but you owe us 10,000. And so, gets into another song, and you meet your main cast of friends here, and it's all people that have gotten screwed over by these two. You've got the accountant, and you've got the comedian, the quote unquote comedian, and you've got all these different random characters.
The plumber.
Yeah. You got all these characters that, over time have been down on their luck. They're all there serving their time and trying to pay off their bill. So yeah, he befriends them, and you get that scrub is the song when he's kind of introduced to the way that they do things there. And the whole thing is about Willie needs to obviously pursue his dream, but how does he get out of this terrible situation that he's in? Which I thought was interesting, because I guess I didn't really watch any trailers as usual, but I didn't see much about what the movie was about.
Right.
So when he got stuck into this indentured servitude part, I was surprised. I was like, oh, that's what this movie's about. Okay. I didn't know that was going to be a plot point. I figured he would just be struggling. But then I guess, how do you make a whole movie about just building the chocolate store? Because you think he's going to get it in the beginning, and then
you need to have some sort of obstacle.
Right. So that becomes the main thing, is he has to figure out how to sneak out and get out to then pursue his dreams and make the chocolate. And so the whole thing is a big adventure, and they come out with some the clever ideas. Like Willie's like, you'll sneak me out in the laundry, and they're like, how are you going to do that? And I thought this part was pretty funny with the whole Bavarian dignitary or whatever,
and tricking them to fall in love.
It's pretty funny. And and his outfit that he wears, they trick him into thinking that he's descended from royalty, and he ends up wearing these short shirts, lederhosen or something. He looks like a
when Chevy Chase got in a fight in Oktoberfest. European vacation.
He's wearing the Oktoberfest, the traditional that kind of
the
outfit.
Suspenders and the shorts
and so it's very funny, and they're distracted, and so he's able to sneak out. And there's just one obstacle after another. Not only do you have the chocolate cartel trying to shut him down at every stop, but it's like he's trying to figure out his recipe, and one thing that's got Willie down is that his mother, who is since past when they first made their bar of chocolate together and she taught him how to make chocolate. He says he saved up and his mother brought one chocolate bean home a day and then they finally had enough. And she says, like, when you share your chocolate with the world, I will appear. And she never told him what the secret recipe was, the last ingredient for chocolate before she died. And he thought, well, when I share, he took it literally. I shared my chocolates, the hover chocolates, with this world, and she didn't appear. And so I can't make the chocolate. I still don't know what that final piece of the recipe is. So he's kind of down on his luck. There's like one thing after another. The Oompa Loompa comes in eventually, which I was surprised how little Hugh Grant was in this movie.
Right.
Like two scenes.
Yeah.
So,
because they use him in the trailer a lot.
And he's in the marketing all over on Facebook and Twitter. When you see the ads, it's him doing his little Loompa dance.
Right.
And it's like, man, he doesn't come in until at least like halfway through. They talk about him a little, but.
Right. They allude to him, but
Willie falls asleep and then he doesn't have his chocolates and he's like, I made them. And he's like, but this little orange man keeps stealing them, which sounds crazy.
Right.
And us as the audience know that Oompa Loompas exist and are real, but like to the outside world, that sounds insane. What's the little girl's name in this?
Noodle.
Okay. Because she's found with a ring around a necklace and it has the letter N on it. And so she's like, I don't know. She was found as a baby and it could stand for whatever, but they ended up calling her the scrub. It ends up finding her and basically like uses that as her ticket to, you know, I've got indentured servitude. And so Noodle's just like, you're crazy. What you did is you fell asleep and
you ate the chocolate.
You ate them all, and that's it. And then I do love this part. I do love the way that Timothée Chalamet plays the innocence of the character, because he goes, oh, that's a much better explanation.
Right.
He knows that this orange man has been chasing him because he's experienced it. But now when he thinks about it, he's like, oh, that is a much better explanation.
Like, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Even though he's experienced it, and it's like, oh, maybe I've been dreaming. Like he takes people like at face value.
Yeah.
He really does. And his innocence, I think he's really good at that, portraying that. And so anyway, so they don't believe him. But, you know, eventually we're introduced to one night when he has a jar of chocolate that is sitting by the door. It's been made to sell the next day. You see this character sneaking through the window. And eventually you see it's the Hugh Grant Oompa Loompa. He ends up having a little fight with him. Willie set up a trap for him so that he would get stuck into a jar. And this is some of the, I'm guessing is in the trailer. I saw this imagery somewhere where Hugh Grant is in a jar. And he ends up catching him. And Hugh Grant explains that in Loompa Land, he was set to guard the cocoa beans. And they're very small. That's the thing. They're not like in the Gene Wilder version where it's little people playing them and they're that size. They are like fairies almost. You know what I mean? They're like, I don't know. They're a mythical creature. They're tiny.
Yeah. He says they're 8 inches tall, but like that's clearly not true. Because when you see them walking side by side, he comes up to right above Timothée Chalamet's knee.
Yeah, I mean,
so I'm like, well, that's not.
They're definitely taller than 8 inches, but they're small though. That's the thing is that so it's different. I don't think we've ever seen this twist on the Oompa Loompa, which I think is helpful because. I thought in 2023,
right?
How do you do Oompa Loompas and how do you cast Hugh Grant?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how is that not problematic? But I think they were very smart to make them so small that it's not a little person.
Right.
They are a...
Yeah, I mean, it really, what it comes down to is the original book, it was racially insensitive. And so the original film was like, oh, well, let's take it and make it not about race and we'll make them these weird colors. And then now it's not about that. But then they cast little people and it's like they're making fun of little people.
Yeah.
And then Burton gets around that by casting one actor and just duping him over and over again.
Masterfully, I might add.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
And then this time it's like they just become more of just a flat out magical creature.
Yeah. I know they're not fairies. They don't fly. But like when I think of the creature, a fairy... Right. Is a humanoid type creature but with wings.
Right.
And I think an Oompa Loompa is a humanoid type creature but they're small.
Right.
And they're not like, what's another word? What is not a gnome, but there's other creatures that are not, you know, that are very tiny and I can't really think.
Like dwarfs?
In Gulliver's Travels, what are those little things that tie them up?
The Lilliputlians.
Okay. So, but they're yeah. very, but they're tiny humanoid creatures, right? Yeah. Like they're not,
yeah.
you know, so it's along those lines where I think was a smart idea because you're never going to make everyone happy, but there are certain things that people cling on to nowadays that right. get offended by. And I think it was smart where it's like, oh yeah, well anyone can play that because that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
The Oompa Loompas.
And I think back when they made the original Gene Wilder version, it was like special effects were a lot more expensive and harder to pull off.
Oh yeah.
So it was a lot easier to be like, cast a bunch of little people.
Right.
Right?
Like Darby O'Gill and the Little People was probably the only one that used a lot of forced perspective and really like changed the way that was presented. But that was a rare for the time. You right. couldn't do that. And
yeah.
So,
like normally, yeah, they would just go out and hire, I mean, you know, yeah. and you would see it all the time. Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You know, it's what they did.
Which there's some horror stories on that set.
For sure.
But, so we meet the Oompa Loompa and we find out that Charlie came and on one of his journeys, Charlie stole those cocoa beans. And to them, I mean, they're so small that these cocoa beans are huge and they grow very slowly. And so he was guarding these three cocoa beans that to someone like, maybe I said Charlie, Willie stole these cocoa beans. And to someone like Willie, like they're tiny little, he took three tiny cocoa beans. Like there's, right. you know, out in nature. He wasn't thinking anything of it.
I think it's also maybe a comment on, you know, British colonialism and yeah. imperialism, you know, because, you know, I think that there's a lot of that baked into the original story, just the exotica nation of yeah. these other cultures, right?
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's what Oompa Loompas really were originally, yeah. right? They're fictional, but it's still supposed to be like the deep, dark heart of Africa.
Right.
Right. And I think that's kind of like, you know, yeah, British people went out and took a bunch of stuff and didn't yeah. even think about how it was affecting the people they took it from.
For sure.
You know?
And so he finds out that because with Oompa Loompas and debts, apparently they have to pay their debts back 1,000 times. And so I keep saying Charlie because it's just weird to have a movie following Willy. You know what
yeah.
I mean? I got to just say Wonka because it's so weird to say that. So Wonka stole these three beans. And so essentially, I don't know if he has to bring back 3,000 chocolates, whatever. But his debt is 1,000 times is what he has to get back. So they sent him off. And it's very interesting how he's dressed like a yachtsman. He's in
right.
like he's very sophisticated and fancy. And I think maybe that is a reaction to making them like tribal. It's like,
right.
well, this one, they're very well off. They have motorboats and he wears a yachting, a scarf and a hat. Right. And they're, yeah. they're not just this
primitive,
right.
tribe.
They're
yeah.
very advanced for it. So anyway, so he gets all his fancy gear and he's shuffled off in his boat and he heads out to the UK to find Wonka. And so he has been stealing back his chocolates to repay that debt. So meanwhile, you got him kind of in the periphery, you know, taking chocolates and dealing with stuff. And so the chocolate cartel realizes Wonka's a threat. And so Wonka has been escaping out to try to sell chocolates and do all this. Meanwhile, they're with Key, the chief of police, and they're like, you know, you have to send him a message. And one of the guys is like, yeah, kill him. So that's kind of
a funny running
yeah.
gag. The one guy is always like, let's kill him. And yeah. they're like, well.
Yeah, that's implied. You don't have to say that part. So they basically are trying to foil him at every stop. And Wonka finds ways to outsmart them. But they keep giving the chief of police. They're bribing him with chocolate. And so they first give him like a tray of whatever and then offer him 100 boxes of chocolates and 1,000 boxes of chocolate. You know, it goes to some astronomical amount, but Key is getting bigger and bigger and bigger
yeah.
and bigger because he's just eating all the chocolate.
Yeah.
They give him more and he eats that amount and more. And so that becomes kind of a running gag throughout the movie. But anyway, he's trying to foil them and, you know, push comes to shove. I mean, a lot of little cute musical numbers and stuff happens in between, but
yeah.
the thing is that he's trying to open up this chocolate store. We come to find out that Noodle, there's actually kind of a, I don't know if you'd say conspiracy. There's a strange plot twist that happens where you get the fact like there's something going on with Slugworth, and when he tries to stop Wonka in the end, he calls Scrubbit, or no, he basically offers Wonka. He says, "If you leave right now, if you leave us alone, we will pay off Scrubbit. We will get all your friends out of there." And will not only pay off Noodle's debt, but will set her up for life. And so she owes $30,000, supposedly. She owes the most of any of them.
Right.
And he says, we're going to also set her up with a place to live and money and everything. And so Wonka has failed because the cartel is in cahoots with the police and they're shutting him down.
They like burn down the factory that he builds.
Yeah, they end up, because Wonka sails, they're sneaking out and they're making so much money.
Actually not a factory, store.
Store, right. Yeah. So, yeah, we should definitely say that because they made so much money, they were able to afford the shop that he visits in the beginning and, you know, needed to find a way to pay rent for. And they said, I think we have enough for 1 week, but obviously if sales go really well, they can keep renting it and all that. So they have their big grand opening, and Slugworth ends up calling Scrubbit and saying, hey, they've been sneaking out and trying to, you know, and getting away, and what, here's what you can do to help me, and, you know, we'll take care of this for good. And so Scrubbit and Belcher end up poisoning, quote unquote, the chocolate supply. So during their big grand opening, it looks very much like the chocolate river, which is just a fountain, but it's like the simple version right. of all the things you know, right? Yeah. So there's like all this magical stuff and they're eating the little flowers and the mushrooms and everything. And it's very much, you're like, oh, I know, that's okay. That's going to become the factory. And they're eating all this stuff and everything sounds great. And this guy comes up and he's paying 100 whatever, you know, or he has like 90 something whatevers that it cost. And they're like, how would you like your change, edible or spendable? And he's like, edible, because everyone's so enamored by how delicious the chocolate is. But what they ended up poisoning it with is stuff from like, I don't know, Yetis, whatever. It's like, again, it's very magical and mystical, but it's like it turns your hair color and you grow hair really fast. All the women are growing beards and the men have colored hair that's really long and just ridiculous. And they're all like, I want my money back. And they start a straight up riot.
Yeah.
I mean, they go nuts. They burn the place to the ground. It's very stressful, very chaotic and crazy. His dream seems dead because the whole place is burned to the ground and they were making money and everyone was happy. And clearly something was, you know, amiss here. Willie's very careful about his ingredients and everything. So Slugworth planted this all and it was a way to get rid of Willie. And he says, hey, here's what we'll do. If you leave and never make chocolate again, I'll set up all your friends. And that's when he says, we're going to pay them all off. But he does say, not only does he have to stop making chocolate, you have to be like banished to Alaska or something. Or the North Pole?
He's going to Alaska.
Oh, it's Alaska. Okay. So it's really interesting. And, but he's like, okay, he realizes, he's like, these are my friends and I care about them and I've failed. And so he's really beaten up about it. And he's like, okay, I'll do it. And so he's on this boat, you know, they get him, there's something suspicious going on with the captain winking at them or whatever, so you know they're setting him up. I mean, this cartel is dangerous. They're not only like, they're not only greedy, but obviously they're not opposed to sending messages of death threats, basically. And so not only are they getting rid of Willie, but we find out later on that they've lined the boat with dynamite and they're going to murder him. So he's on deck and he gets this like first class economy or something seat or whatever, which is, you know, out on the deck of this boat. It's just a terrible thing they set him up with. And the Oompa Loompa comes along and he's like, yeah, I hitched the same ride. And, you know, he's sitting there. And I did think it was funny, that callback of the okay, I have to say, Hugh Grant does seem like kind of a miserable bastard when you hear him in interviews and stuff. Yeah. Like, I think he's a self-proclaimed miserable bastard. Right. He's so grumpy and just so, you know, whatever. Perfect for this role. He is perfect. And the way that you can just, because I think he really is irritated to be there, so it comes across in all his lines where he's just, you know, inconvenienced by it all. And so the Oompa Loompa, he's like, he has this like motorized chair that reclines and stuff, and it's a callback.
The double, huh?
Yeah. Because earlier Noodle says this to Willie. She says, and Willie goes, what? And then nothing. And then she says, again, a double, huh? That, you know, so it's kind of a callback where Willie does it. And then Hugh Grant, every time, though, I do love these like slow. This maybe is more like British humor. I love the slow where you have to watch him stand up in the chair, get his mask off.
And then he says, what? And he's like, okay. And he puts the chair back down.
And you watch the whole thing happen, though. Yeah. And then it comes
what? Back. Nothing. Okay. And he does it all again. Yeah.
And then he's like, no, you said hunt twice. What is the, you know, whatever. So that was a funny little bit. But they eventually realize, he's like, this is not the way to give up on your dream. You need to pursue it. And so they go to the captain to say, turn around. And then it's all lined with dynamite. And I like this because Hugh Grant's like, see ya. This is my stop. Like, he's very funny in this role.
This is a you problem.
Yeah. And he jumps off the boat. And then Willie ends up jumping off. And then I tell you, I think I laughed out loud. It was pretty funny when Willie shows back up to Noodle. Noodles has now, they've let everybody go except for Noodles.
Right.
Even though she got the most money and everything, but she's like, But Scrubbit's like, Slugworth paid me more to keep you here indefinitely. And so anyway, she's punished and she's put in the, it reminded me of the Chokey. I think it's all very Roald Dahlian. You know what I mean? Because in Matilda, it's the Chokey. And here,
I've never seen Matilda.
Oh, you've never seen Matilda? Even the musical?
No.
The play?
No.
Oh, all of it's really good. There's a musical on Netflix that's an adaptation of the stage play. And the stage play is an adaptation of, you know, the movie, which was an adaptation of the book. You know what I mean? There's lots of versions. But it's a cute, what's the girl's name in the movie? I totally
Matilda. Blame.
Yeah, oh, thank you so much.
That's what I'm here for.
But Matilda was a really good kids' movie, and the Netflix version that's a musical is really good, too. So you should check them out. But there's a thing called the Chokey that the Trenchbull, the mean headmistress of the school, puts the kids in.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why they created the, I don't know what they call it, but they throw her in a isolation thing. And
gotcha. Watching Scrubbit, I kept thinking of Mrs. Hannigan from Annie.
Oh, okay, sure. So she goes there, and then Willie pops up, and, you know, in a very fantastical way, he's got all these ladders strung together, and he's climbed up, and he's poking in, and she's like, I thought you were gone. And he's like, no, we're here to set things straight. And this line, I laughed out loud. I thought it was so funny. He's like, I had a brisk 4-mile swim to get my head straight. And it was such a throwaway line.
Yeah.
But the fact that, I mean, because when you see them on the boat leaving for Alaska, it's freezing out. You can see their breath. It's chilly. You know that they're cold. And so jumping into water, you know that water's freezing.
Right.
And he just totally throws away because she's like, why are you back? I thought you left. And he just has this throwaway line of, I had a very brisk 4-mile, and I think he swam 4 miles in it.
It's also nice to have it acknowledged.
Yeah, that, right. Like, that's what I mean, though. It's thrown away line, and it's funny, but, you know, we would be asking ourselves, how did he get back in the
Yeah.
So anyway, I loved that line, and it was just so funny. But they get back together, and their whole, now it's a heist. And so the crew of friends that we mentioned earlier that were released and the now broken out of jail Noodle come together, and they put together a heist. So now a bunch of things we didn't mention come together. Mr. Bean is the head of the front for the chocolate cartel's operation. So he's at this big church, and Rowan Atkinson is like in the confessional, and they bribe him with chocolates, and he eats them, and then they go down the elevator, and that's where all the chocolate's stored. So we end up going back there, and there's
people really value chocolate in this world.
No kidding, right? I think that was a funny way to set up this world. That's how the cartel runs things, is because they bribe them with their chocolate, and they're so greedy and they want money. But yeah, they're able to buy everyone off with chocolate,
right?
Which is a funny, whimsical. That's part of the whole thing. But earlier, it was kind of strange. I had never heard this in the Wonka lore, but he's like, I need giraffe's milk to make my chocolate. Now, I mean, that does sound like a weird thing Willy Wonka would say, but I had never heard that part of it, so I thought that was interesting. But they had to break into the zoo, and that is actually another one of my favorite jokes, is all the callbacks with the security guard and the security for the chocolate cartel, and how you think it's just so random, and like, she, you know, I need to talk to her from that whatever third grade or whatever, and then to find out that they are the two that, I don't know, that was really funny. But anyway, so there's a giraffe, they have to break into the zoo, and there's a really fun, whimsical sequence with him with Noodle and floating around with balloons around the zoo and all this stuff. So they get the giraffe, they set it loose on the church. Now, this church, there's like someone.
The CGI on this giraffe was really good.
Phenomenal, right?
Because it's like, I can't imagine they're using a real giraffe in today's world.
No, and the thing is that the way it's interacting, they just.
But it looked really real.
I thought the same thing. One of the points I wanted to bring up, I'm glad you mentioned it, was that CG has gotten really good. And I know that part of it is because we've gotten used to it. Like when CG first started getting really heavily used, we were like, man, that's so clearly fake. But I think, one, it's gotten really good. Two, we're used to, like, they're just not going to use animals in movies anymore. I mean, maybe a dog and maybe a little bit, but like,
they'll use domesticated animals, but anything wild, I think now they,
but even dogs, most of them are CG, but they look really
good. I
think
it depends on how much they want the dog to do.
Sure, of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if it's just sitting curled up by the fire or whatever.
But if they're going to, if it's going to be like an actual character,
action sequences, and
it's
interact,
easier to just CGI it.
For sure, it's easier and it's safer. So I think we've gotten used to it. And when I saw that giraffe, I mean, it looks so real.
And there's a lot of like close-ups of the giraffe face.
Well, so now this is what I'm thinking. I don't know who did the special effects for this. It might be ILM. They do so much stuff.
Yeah.
But they used a CG. Well, there was a real one for sure, but they also used a CG in The Last of Us, the TV show. And part of me wonders if you get a really well-rendered giraffe, if they repurpose,
right,
because like, it takes a long time to make a...
Why do it again?
Right? Yeah. And it's a giraffe. It's not like you're making a CG of this same person or whatever,
right,
where you're clearly like, well, that's just copy-pasted. Like Disney with The Jungle Book and Robin Hood, they
right,
would reuse the animation.
Yeah.
So part of me thought, this looks really real. And then I'm like, well, there were some shots in The Last of Us that even though they did use a real giraffe for part of it, you know, some of it was CG. And that looked really good. And I thought, you know, they probably just take that giraffe model.
Yeah.
They've already got it. And I also noticed that a lot of that stuff is at night. Because at first I'm like, man, they're going to the zoo at night, which makes sense. It's closed, but it's so dark.
Right.
And I think that always helps.
Where
for it sure looks really good, but also the room is so dark.
Right.
But no, it looked great. And even running around the church and everything, it looked real. But there's a church service and it's for some high up person and it's a big deal, but this giraffe is running around and so it's causing trouble. But basically our characters have to break in, and their idea is to, the accountant that's stuck at Scrubbit's says that the reason why he's there is Slugworth imprisoned him because he saw the real books. They have a real set of, they had a front set of books and then cooked books,
right,
and the books show every single bribe and everything they've ever done. Apparently they want to keep track of all their crimes, so they keep this book. And so he knew too much and he got sent to Scrubbit's for that. And they want to go find this book so that they can, you know, clear their good names and get all these people arrested, because like the chief of police and everyone's in cahoots. So they want to break in, and while they're there, Willy and Noodle actually end up getting like trapped in a, almost like in a Wonka-esque death trap.
Yeah, where, it was where, very reminiscent of Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, because they're like, you know, they're in and they're breaking into this chocolate, like this safe in this vault, and it's all the extra chocolate, because this is where the cartel is keeping, you know, they're controlling the supply. So they've got all this extra chocolate just being stirred constantly in here. And they end up trapping them in there, locking them in, and flooding like all the chocolatier guys are like, Slugworth is like, he's talking to them and he's like, how much chocolate do you have? And they add it up and they're like, I think we have enough to take care of them. So they dump all their extra chocolate that's not already being protected in the safe. They just dump it all in there. And so the chocolate is rising and they're essentially going to murder these two
drown,
people in,
yeah,
in the chocolate. And they
death by chocolate.
Yeah. And it's kind of like reminiscent of the fizzy lifting. I feel like it was,
yeah,
you know, visually a very similar them rising to the top like this and going to their death, and they're going to squish them in there. And I mean, it looked very, I mean, clearly they're not there in a more shallow area, but I mean, they were covered in chocolate in,
yeah,
a way to where it looked like they built some kind of a swim tank.
Yeah.
And you know, the chocolate looked like chocolate and not a river of poop, which was nice.
Yeah.
They perfected the whole.
That's a very subtle distinction.
It is, and it looks like it's chocolate.
That's why it's so important to get the 4K versions of these movies.
Exactly. Yeah. What I really liked is when, you know, they were, you know, having to hold their breath, and like the chocolate was so high that it would get on their faces and it looked like chocolate.
Well,
like,
it's funny. This is nitpicky.
Yeah.
I noticed on his chin, there was a layer of chocolate stuck. On her chin, there wasn't. So like his was clearly makeup that,
okay,
they had applied. And like when her bottom of her face, like bobbed
down,
below,
yeah,
like she didn't come up with chocolate stuck to her face.
Oh,
like
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. Okay.
Yeah. Cause I was just like, I was fascinated with like how much they made it look like chocolate.
Like, right.
So,
okay,
I was like, oh wow, it's actually sticking to his face. And then I realized when she dipped down, it didn't stick to,
okay,
her face. So clearly it,
yeah,
was just makeup designed to,
got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Cause I was fascinated by how real it looked,
yeah,
with them you know, drowning.
And then once I knew that, I could totally see this is just brown water. Like, once I realized what they were doing,
it wasn't
like
sticking,
right,
to their, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they do a good job. I'll
for sure.
For
like,
that.
I mean, it was like one moment of bad editing that
yeah,
made me catch it. And only because I suddenly found myself fascinated with like,
yeah,
how are they doing this?
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, they end up getting saved because the Hugh Grant Oompa Loompa, the only Oompa Loompa I think we see other than that one flashback. But
yeah,
you know, when we say, what do they call him? He says that he's of higher stature. They call him
Lofty,
but really they call him Shorty. He's one of the shorter Oompa,
right,
Loompas, but he makes it seem like he's a big deal. But anyway, so I guess we should say Lofty is his name. He comes and saves the day, and only because Willie still owes him one jar of chocolates, you know, so he's collected whatever, 2,999, and he gets what he's owed, and, you know, he's got to go get it from him or else he'll never get paid back and can't ever come back to Loompa Land. And so he ends up going back for, you know, to get his chocolate, basically. And so he pulls a lever. It's an emergency release. All the chocolate leaves into, like, the underground chocolate sewer system, I guess, that feeds into this fountain.
You want to make sure you're in the chocolate sewer system.
I know, right?
And not the regular sewer system, because they're going to look very similar.
Exactly.
My guess is they smell a lot different.
When you're snacking out of the fountain with the cups and stuff, yes, it's a very important distinction.
That ain't fondue. No. That's a fondon't.
Nice. So anyway, all the chocolate cartel is like, yeah, we really took care of them. But all of our friends end up rerouting all the chocolate that's drained out into the public square, into the chocolate fountain, and it's just going everywhere. And so now they've all used all their chocolate up to take Willie out, you know, and obviously a very stupid, maniacal thing, because it's like, well, now what are you going to sell? They've used basically all their chocolate.
Right.
Now, well, I guess they figured they could go get it again. It's just going to taste a little bit like human remains. But anyway, they've just funneled it all out into the open. So now they're taken out. Also, now they have the book. And so they give that to one of the police guys. And, you know, the chief that can hardly now get out of the car, he pulls up and Key is so huge that he can't even get out. But he's like, let me just see that book. And then the other head guy that we've seen a lot looks through and he goes, I can't do that. You're in this book. And so anyway, all, you know, the bad guys are put in jail. The chief of police is put in jail. And everyone's celebrating with all the chocolate. And Willie's still kind of looking there. And he's like, I mean, this is great and all, but I still haven't seen this sign or whatever. But he unwraps the bar of chocolate he's been carrying around. I'm glad that it hasn't melted. You know?
I know, I mean, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, doesn't chocolate go bad? Like, this chocolate would have to be like 15 years old.
Well, if the bar of chocolate my grandma uses to garnish the pies at Christmas have anything to say about it, it does not go bad. I think there's been many logo changes on the Hershey bar since then. But anyway, so he opens up this bar of chocolate, and it ends up having a golden ticket in it.
Yeah, that was a little on the nose.
That was really, everything has been pretty subtle. I mean, there's a lot of good little musical cues hidden throughout the movie. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's been pretty subtle, but I didn't think it was that bad. At that point, I felt like it had earned it.
Yeah.
But his mom had left a note, but it was on what looked like a golden ticket. And it said that, you know, the secret ingredient is not the chocolate.
It's who you share it with. Yes.
And so he breaks apart the bar, of course, is in six beautiful squares. And he and his five friends each get one of the squares and they eat it. And he realizes that it's the people. And so he now, you know, opens up his factory with all the friends involved and, you know, and all the friends he's made along the way. And this is where we get the pure imagination part. So Noodles is an orphan, and we kind of glossed over it, but there was something with Slugworth. Come to find out, Slugworth's, I guess, older brother had a kid, and it was Noodles, and he died, and Slugworth ended up bringing the mom gave the baby to Slugworth and said, please get her medical attention. And then he takes her, ends up dropping her off at Scrubbit, comes back to the mom and said she died. So no one knows.
She would be an heir to the fortune. Exactly. The family fortune.
So he had to take out the Noodles for everything because, the brother, and it would be passed down to Noodles. So that's why he got the family fortune. She's really the N that they thought was on the ring was actually a Z for Zabbit or something. It's a name you don't hear often, but Zabbit Slugworth or whatever. And so it was actually a Z. It's her family. And so they end up changing
her name to Zoodle.
Yeah, right. That's perfect.
I really thought they were going to do that.
That's pretty funny. That would be a Willy Wonka thing for
right?
sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, Willy Wonka ends up, I don't know, the mom's name is something Smith, and he ends up finding
Dorothy Smith. I don't know why I remember that.
Okay. Maybe because Dorothy, you know, at least the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Well, one of their friends is a phone operator. And so she was on, I guess that's why she got thrown into servitude, because she must have overheard something that Slugworth said at some point, whatever. But she's got these skills, and so she was able to get on the line. She called all the different Dorothy Smiths and found the one. She's a librarian. So Willie you know, Timothy Chalamet does his version of Pure Imagination, which is kind of a sleepy cover. It's like, yeah, a very slowed down version. And they do this thing where it's like blueprints. Like, so at this point on, it's kind of cool visually how everything has these drawn on blueprints around everything. So Noodles is reunited with her mother. Willie finds his spot for the factory. It's an old castle that's for sale. And you start seeing it become the factory kind of that we know from the original movie.
Right.
And yeah, and then that's where it ends.
Yeah.
Oh, and the bad guys, I guess in the post credits, Scrubbit and Belcher get their comeuppance because in the book they found out that they had paid them off. And so they drink all the potion, whatever you call the ingredients.
Yeah, try to hide the evidence.
And of course become different colors and their hair is all grown out and they're like, we didn't do nothing, and they put them in jail. And so
I really enjoyed this movie.
It was fun.
I did not expect to enjoy this movie as much as I did, and I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we should say that Olivia Colman is Scrubbit's. I don't know who that actor was that played Belcher. I thought he was funny, but I didn't recognize him. But Olivia Colman, and then Sally Hawkins from The Shape of Water, you know, one of our famous episodes.
One of our favorite movies.
Yes. Played Willie's mother in the flashbacks.
Gotcha.
So there's a lot of people, and that's a Paul King thing, you know. So the director of Paddington, Paul King, directed this.
Yeah.
He actually passed on Paddington 3 to make this movie, which is kind of odd because those Paddington movies are so beloved.
Right.
But as an artist, I can see.
Like, I've done two of them now. I'm good.
Yeah. I'll make a Wonka movie, which is going to be a huge deal. So that's why he did.
You also don't want to get the rep as only being able to make Paddington movies.
Guy. Yeah. Exactly.
I get that. So,
I believe they're in Paddington. So those actors that I mentioned are in that. And so it's cool to see Rowan Atkinson. That guy pretty much looks the exact same.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like Mr. Bean. He's doing his thing. So yeah, you get a lot of British, they're British actors.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I thought this was a lot of fun.
It's fun. I mean, it's a family movie. This is a perfect movie for the holidays to take your family to.
Yeah.
There's a lot in it for everyone. It's fun, whimsical, very, you know, there's not a lot of like scary stuff like the first one.
Right. No, you know, like there's
creep out some kids. I mean, menace. It's dark,
there's real
right?
menace. Yeah.
And, this is a movie where you don't really have to worry about that. It's pretty safe and not that challenging. You
Most of the menace comes from the villains, not the people you're supposed to like.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So that's fun.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and we can say where to find ourselves.
Sure. This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett and subscribe to Circle of Wizards to hear me and Matt F. Bosler, friend of the show, chat about video games.
And this is Tom. You can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon at patreon.com/RealSpoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Renaud destroys the Easter window display. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.